We have a special guest now with an exclusive, Mia Maria Pope, who is who lived in Honolulu, who is a contemporary of the Mac Daddy Obama. She knew him as Barry Satoru in the early years there when he was a high school student. And Barry always, according to what Mia is going to say to us in a few moments, identified himself as pretty much as a foreigner, and also as a cocaine-smoking homosexual on the order of Richard Pryor type. And so she knew him, conversated with him, and is ready now to talk to the Manning Report about her relationship with the Mac Daddy. She calls him Barry Satoru back in the 70s. Mia, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am here.
Well, first of all, we thank you for calling us today and informing us of this information you have as a personal reference of Obama. Could you just kind of run it down and tell us how you knew him? What was some of your participation or actions or interactions with him?
Okay, I'm happy to. And thank you for having me on, Dr. Manning. I really admire your good work you're doing. I was born in 63. I was born in California. My family moved to Waimanalo, Hawaii when I was a young infant. So all of my formative years were spent in Waimanalo, Hawaii, which is on the island of Oahu. And then my father's work, he was a musician, and then we would fly back and forth from California to Hawaii. So invariably, I spent my summers, we would have like a hotel or we'd get an apartment in Waikiki. Now, I did not meet or see Barry Satoru till about 1977. I was about late 13, 14 years old. And you know, during those years, during the summertime, we as neighborhood kids, we would sort of hang out, and we all sort of, you know, knew each other's business and didn't really have anything to plug into. We pretty much hung out in Waikiki and at the beach and so forth. And I knew of this individual. His name was Barry Satoru, and he always portrayed himself as a foreign student, and that didn't mean much to me then, but, you know, that's just what we knew about him. And he wasn't really close within my particular circle of friends. He was a little bit older than me, and he very much was within sort of the gay community, which there is a thriving, even back then, gay community in that area, particularly the Diamond Head area. And we knew Barry as just common knowledge that, you know, girls were never anything that he was ever interested in. And, you know, as a young teenager, you know, as a young girl, I mean, it was clear to me that Barry was strictly into men. And, you know, not that I had any designs on him or anything. I mean, he and I really didn't even get along because one of his attributes that's still evident today is that he was even a pathological liar back then. I'm not kidding. I mean, every time this guy would open his mouth, the most outlandish stories would come out of his mouth. And so pretty soon I'm going back over 30 years here, but I remember us saying, you know, like, Barry, don't you ever get tired of lying? You know, he was a pathological liar even then. He'd make
What
you
were
tired
some of the kinds of lies he would tell? Mia, what some of the lies, just for an example of was he just egotistical? Was he lying about
it? Dr. Manning. It was always some self-aggrandizing thing. And I'm doing my best, you know, because I'm going back so far, it's hard for me to remember a verbatim conversation. I have very clear image memories. But it was always something to egotistically boost himself, that it was always something how he was, you know, he had this weird air where, like, he used to go around bumming cigarettes from people, which, you know, I think we all did. But the thing was with him is he would turn it on try to, like, see if he could get something off of you type thing, and then as soon as you'd be stupid enough to hand him a cigarette, he'd snap in an instant and walk away as if it's like insult to injury, you know what I mean? So he didn't actually have a lot of friends or anything, really. He was just in the periphery, and I had some gay acquaintances. And remember, you know, this is the late 70s. I mean, drugs were around, and, you know, that lifestyle was just starting to really come to the forefront, and as far as people were very out front with their personal behavior. And so, you know, it was just always one thing or another with Barry. He just was seen to be incapable of being genuine or telling the truth about anything. So that kind of turned us off. But, you know, we were young teenagers, we're naive, it's kind of like, all right, yeah, Barry the liar, whatever. And then, but we, one thing that he did brag about, now remember, this is the late 70s, this is before crack was invented, or if it was invented, we never saw it around. I never heard of it until the 80s. So this was, if you were going to do cocaine, it was like in the powder form, and it was very expensive. Well, here we are, a bunch of broke teenagers, and you know, there, in other words, for somebody to brag that they have this cocaine was, you know, somewhat newsworthy within our little clique. And he would sort of, he probably was telling the truth. He would get with these older white gay men, and this is how we just pretty much had the impression that that's how he was procuring his cocaine. In other words, he was having sex with these older white guys, and that's how he was getting his cocaine to be able to freebase. But that wasn't the nature only. I mean, his lies would be just mundane thing. I mean, in other words, if he told you the sun was shining, you better go out and check. It just, you know, it was anything that he would lie about.
You,
it seemed like he just couldn't tell the truth about anything.
How do you, I'm sure you're not the only one from Obama's childhood.
But
also you are aware that very few, your statements now are extremely rare, very few people have come from Honolulu, from Waikiki, or from those haunts of Obama to actually make mention of the fact that they knew him during these years of his life. What do you attribute that to, that no one has come to identify him?
Yeah, I'd like to share that with your listening audience. Okay, well, one, I'm a Christian, and I care deeply about my country, so there's a certain anger that is within me about this individual destroying my country, so he's not on my Christmas list, and so I don't like the guy. And I mean, if he was doing a good job, regardless of what his past was, I wouldn't be on the phone with you today. But what I and why me as opposed to someone else, I would just simply say maybe courage. I've gotten to a point in my life where it turns my stomach when people take the low road and don't stand up and tell the truth and maybe, you know, just be out front like what you do, Dr. Manning. I mean, what you do is courage, and you stand up and you tell it, and it's righteous. So I guess I'd like to follow within that line, I refuse to be a coward.
Am I hearing you say that, well, when he first came on the scene, running during the primary to be the nominee, having all that happen, and then capturing illegally the election, at first you did not have any cause to come forward, in as much as that perhaps he might have done some good things.
Precisely. Like, had I had a photograph or a video, I would have immediately, like, coveted that and then waited to see it. I would have leaked that sort of thing. Unfortunately, I don't have a video or a picture. So that's part of, as I started to wake up about Barry Sotoro, and it kind of kept me behind because I actually called the FBI several times exposing his using fake Social Security numbers, and they did nothing. And I told them about my past. Nobody ever called me back. Nobody ever wanted to get any further information. So I felt that I was being stonewalled. And this is several years ago, I'm talking about, that I contacted the FBI. So nobody was interested in my story. So that's part of it. And then when he very first came on the scene, I scratched my head thinking, has he really changed his ways? you know, in my head thinking, you know, could this be the same guy that I remember? Because I remember this guy as low road, you know, guy. In other words, you wouldn't trust this guy to walk your dog. And I thought, really? You know, this guy. And so I'm kind of waiting to see what he's doing. And
well, let me ask you this question.
You know, because it's not, in other words, I have gay friends. I don't care that he's gay. I don't care even that he smoked prolifically free-based cocaine in the 70s. I was sort of waiting to see what sort of adult he was.
When Larry Sinclair, publicized and had a press conference indicating he had had a homosexual relationship with Obama, and that that they both smoked crack cocaine. This was before the election. No one really paid it any attention, or paid Larry any attention. I want to come back to that. Let me just ask another question. I think it's probably more important.
Sure.
I noticed you say with emphasis Barry Satoru, and that would be the way you remember him because that's who he was, and we all know that that's who he was when he was in Hawaii. He goes to Occidental, and at some point between Occidental and the next time we see him, his name is Barack Obama.
Right.
Which
cracked me up. I thought it was hilarious. So.
Why do you think it was hilarious?
Another indicator to me, like something shady here, is like, what's really going on with this guy? And so, yeah, so I it's etched in my memory. He'll always be Barry Satoru to me.
I hear that.
And, yeah, and as far as, you know, I understand, I am familiar with the Larry Sinclair story, and I am here to tell the listening audience that Barry Satoru was smoking a cocaine pipe long, long before Larry Sinclair.
Do you know, did you meet his mother, Stanley Ann, or did you meet Frank Marshall Davis?
I saw his mother around. She was never involved. I thought I saw the long brunette hair. And this is a sketchy memory, but no, I did not have any interaction with
Stanley. Why do you think his grandmother never publicly endorsed him, said anything at all about him? Why do you think that's so? I mean, you may not know the family. You probably didn't get a chance to know the family.
He's a shameful individual. I mean, she must have known what you and I know, and now your listening audience knows. This guy is not, I don't want to say foul words, you know, but this guy is like that kind of, you know, he's a scumbag kind of guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, he is.
He's proud of.
No doubt about
that. Yeah. So I was familiar with the apartment building that his grandparents lived in, and that was off of Barakania. This is in Honolulu, Hawaii. Now, you know, Waikiki's just an area where us kids used to hang out, but I have had ties to Punahou through friends and things like that, and I'm familiar with the apartment building that his grandparents lived in. And it's just a simple walk-up. It didn't look like these people had any kind of money whatsoever. And that was another thing that struck us, like, how do you live there and go to Punahou, which is a really expensive school? And, I mean, like, even back in the day, it was something on the order of $600 or $700 a month in 70s dollars. I mean, it's a big, you know, big tuition to go to that school.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And also, it's very difficult to get in at mid-level, meaning that school, unless you have something stellar going on with you, they'll only accept you if you start out in kindergarten. So for him to have, you know, come from Indonesia at whatever age, and I didn't know him then when he was fresh from Indonesia, but to have come over at that age and then just get inserted into Punahou, let me tell you, and I'm no stranger to Punahou, that is very unusual. And then we all just kind of thought, oh, he's a foreign, okay, they have some special waiver for foreign students, which tied into what he told everybody.
Well, why do you think that Obama's cocaine use, his drug use, and that he was having experiences with older, were they white men, businessmen in the Honolulu area? Well, I shouldn't say, why do you think? Do you think that his entrance into Punahou could have been...
Punahou.
Could have been the influence of white businessmen or homosexual or gay group inside that school? Because I was concerned about how he could come from Jakarta and Islamic culture at the age of 10 years old and immediately transition into one of the more exclusive schools in America at the time.
Exactly. Now as a grown adult, I can look back and I would have to say that there had to have been some type of, I'm going to say CIA, because I don't know any other agency that would, you know, get involved in these sorts of things, but I don't know anything like that as a fact, but something or some force got this guy set up. I mean, it was certainly not a natural thing. So I don't know who, what spit column or shadow government or whatever was responsible for his entree onto that scene, but something unusual had to have happened. In other words, he wasn't just some guy out of nowhere filling out an application from Indonesia, and then Punahou said, welcome. That wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, we could be clear about that. So that has been the trend, Mia, from Punahou to Occidental, allegedly to Columbia, and also to Harvard.
Right. No one ever saw him at Columbia. Remember, we have people who were in the same class, supposedly, majored in political science, which was supposedly Barry's exact major, and they went around and interviewed every single member of that student body, and not one person ever saw him at that school.
Have you had any contact with any of the other people that used to hang out with you down at Waikiki that also are observing Obama and they're amazed at what he has done, the lies that he has told, and he is a liar, no doubt about that.
He's
a drug
liar.
He's a sexual pervert as well. He is a pervert. Because we only have a few moments left, I want to ask you about his moving to Chicago. There were two deaths in Chicago that the world has let go by. One was Donald Young. The other was Nate Spencer. And there was three deaths. And the third person's name escapes me right now.
I know Larry Bland.
Larry Bland, that's right.
Larry Bland. And all three of those individuals were murdered within days of each other.
This same Obama that used to hang out, smoke dope, freeload cigarettes, try to put a thrill on you, try to put a Mac on you if he wanted something from you.
Exactly.
And the moment he got what he wanted, he dropped the Mac game and
dropped the Mac immediately.
But
he was a good
Mac daddy. He knew how to Mac back in the 1970s. He knew how to Mac.
Correct.
He knew that game perfectly.
Correct. Have you had an opportunity to see the picture of him in drag on YouTube?
Yeah, there's a picture of him in drag with and a leather outfit that's really revealing more flesh, and the only place it covers up is his genitals, but everything else is fully exposed. It looked like some sort of a sadistic outfit. I've seen that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those boots he's wearing are in a man's size, so for anybody out there that thinks that maybe he drugged this out of his mother's closet on a dare or something, remember, he had to have those boots specially made because they're in a man's size. But I actually saw Barry not in that outfit, and I wasn't present while that picture was taken. But on a couple of occasions, there was a movie called Rocky Horror Picture Show that was really popular back then.
Yeah.
And so one of the lead characters in that, it was played by, I think, Tim Curry, and the teenagers would go week after week after week and go see this. Well, anyway, he would dress up as a transvestite sometimes for that. So I actually saw him in other attire similar to that picture that you've just described. But I wasn't present for that picture that
Why
you were
do you
looking
think
at there.
That Larry Bland, Nate Spencer, Donald Young were all killed within a heartbeat of each other? They were all members of the Trinity United Church of Christ, Trinity United Church of Hell, there in Chicago, Illinois, where Obama was a member, and yet the investigations into their deaths have gone absolutely nowhere.
I can say that there are forces in this country that like Barry's slimy qualities and what he's doing to our country, and that must be these globalists or the gang bangsters, you name it, this secret shadow elements of the government that simply want to destroy our Constitution and roll us into Marxism. And you'd have to ask yourself, why on earth would anybody want that? And I can only say they're psychopaths. I don't know why they'd want that. But there's obviously elements within the government that are protecting him.
You are revealing this information to me today, and we're ever so grateful and completely indebted to you for talking to us as one who had youth experience with Obama. What are your plans beyond now? Are you going to step up your privilege, if you will, that you did know him, you know who he is? And then my other question, do you now fear for your life? Because Obama has been known to kill people, and he will kill. He's a killer. He's not only a liar.
Absolutely. Are inconvenient, even, forget about getting in his way. You know, I'm at a point, Dr. Manning, I mean, I told you I'm a Christian, and I kind of live by the philosophy you're going to win or lose with both feet, and I refuse to live the rest of my life as a coward. So come what may, I'm already made my peace with Jesus, and, you know, if the world ends tomorrow for me, I'm clear about what I have in store for me. I'm not trying to be a martyr, and I'm not saying things like I'm going to tempt things, but I absolutely will not be a coward and do like a lot of these people do. And in other words, I believe if you submit to evil, you're serving it. So then I have to fight evil, if you know what I mean.
No, so I understand clearly.
I'm just not going to be passive with it.
No, you. I understand you clearly, 100%, and that is the only way to go. Unfortunately, people don't choose that. It takes a certain amount of commitment and understanding to say what you just said. It takes a certain amount of wisdom. You don't get that overnight. You don't get there in just a heartbeat. You don't get there fictitiously. What you have just said to me does not come from the mouth of very many people. And I think most people know that. So that within itself is sustaining power. And I think you know that.
It will sustain you. Maybe one last thing. I know you're pressed for time. Is that if another person can see someone have some courage, then maybe it could be either inspiring or as an example. Stand up. You know, don't bury your head in the sand, and don't be a coward. That's really kind of what I want to do. And I will speak up again to whomever's willing to listen.
Well, I'm afraid your story is going to get told more often now, and you're probably going to be sought after, I perceive, Mia, in the days to come. And I'm not sure how soon, but I'm sure in the days to come, when America wakes up and the world wakes up and they recognize that they need to correct this wrong, they're going to need to put the pieces together, and they're going to need you, Mia. So we're going to pray for you.
Thank you.
God for where you are at present. And quite frankly, I would pray to God that a lot of other people could have the wisdom that you are expressing. But the world's going to need you to put all the puzzles together. So stay strong in the Lord and in the power of his might, and you're going to be
fine. I will.
Is there anything you'd like
to say? Thank you, Dr. Manning.
Is there anything you'd like to say should someone want to contact you? Any further information you'd like to give before?
I'm happy to, you may share my phone number. I don't have a website or anything. I'm a private citizen, so I'm not, you know, in the business. I don't have any plans to write a book or anything, because I don't think I could fill up a book. But if someone's interested for legitimate reasons to hear my story, I'm happy to give it, and you're welcome to share my phone number anytime you like.
All right. Okay. Well, Mia, we are really greatly indebted to you for what you have done, not only the information that you have given and given us a personal view of Barry Satoru that has become Barack Obama, but also I think you're inspiring just by the way you've have demonstrated your commitment to come forward. Beyond the information, though, you did give some revelations, and that's a good thing, and we're all excited about the new information we know about this creep, but your inspiration is probably...
That's really the thing. You know, if we can, us Americans, let's just, you know, because we're all going to lose unless we get together. So, if that goes to the good of someone's heart, I'm thrilled.
Thank you, Mia. And God bless you. Stay strong in the Lord and the power of his might. All right,
thank
everybody.
You, sir. God bless you, too.
You've heard that stunning interview, if you will, not because of I'm interviewing, but because of the information revealed about Barry Satoru. We have got a major issue going on in our nation, and I'm calling on all Americans to stand up. And let's out this person. Let's out this sleaze bag, this cocaine snorting, freebasing, crack smoking, homosexual pervert, Mac Daddy. And you know, I told people that God said to me that Obama was a Mac Daddy. And this is the first person coming forward that stated Obama would Mac people. He play games on them, run a thrill up their legs, if you will, like the way he macked Chris Matthews. And then after he gets what he wants from you, he drops you like a hot potato. Obama's a Mac Daddy, everybody. This was really very powerful. I'm going to stay in touch with Mia, and we're going to talk to her again.